Hello, this is Michael Ray, editor of Redstone Science Fiction. I'd like to welcome you to the Redstone Science Fiction Story Podcast, number 2. We're excited to bring you Raising Tom Chambers by Daniel Powell from Redstone SF number 1. Daniel teaches a variety of writing courses at a small college in Northeast Florida. He's an avid outdoorsman and long-distance runner, and he shares a small house near the Intercoastal Waterway with his wife and daughter. You can learn more about Daniel from his online journal at danielwpowell.blogspot.com. It's read for us again by Amanda Fitzwater, who's an aspiring author and voice artist from Christchurch, New Zealand. She's been published in such venues as M-Brain SF and the earthquake relief anthology Tales for Canterbury. You can learn more about Amanda at her blog at pickledthink.blogspot.com. All right, let's get started.
Raising Tom Chambers by Daniel Powell. The world had become a gray and wet place in the years after the dieback. The bloated oceans consumed the coastlines. The flu contagions bloated the people. H1N1 had been the warning shot. R16B had taxed the global community's response efforts. VX9 was the knockout blow, the pandemic wildfire that plunged the world into savagery and suffering, into chaos and barbarism. VX9 had eliminated, for all intents and purposes, the Earth's human population. In the dying months, roughly a dozen weeks in early autumn of 2019, the last epidemiologist had run the numbers. Please hit the lights on the way out, thank you very much. And had predicted a 99.9999998% global dieback. But there were people left, and Penelope Crump was one of them. She survived while every other person she had ever known suffocated in the misery of a cruel, wet flu. She was a small woman, stooped slightly from the toll of what had been a hard life. At 58 years of age, she wore her hair in a long braid down the center of her curved back. She had bright, furtive blue eyes, and she enjoyed singing, though until she picked up Tom Chambers, her days had been very quiet indeed. Earth had moved on, and in the span of 10 short years, it had begun to reclaim itself. Time, weather, and a flourishing wildlife population had scrubbed the landscape of corpses. The air was clean and clear, the seasons returning and more clearly defined. There were still scores of the dead indoors, of course, but Penny rarely went inside any more. The reminders were too visceral, the decay too complete. In the first years after the dieback, Penny Crump had wandered, searching for others. She only found two. Hank Ridley had died of a heart attack shortly after she'd encountered him. He was much older than she was, and had heart disease. Sarah, on the other hand, had stolen away in the middle of the night. An empty place remained in Penny's heart, and it ached when she thought about the girl whose surname she had never learned. Penny wandered, looking for others and trying to stay a step ahead of the Astras. Even back then, the Astras were rare. Extraterrestrial hitchhikers, the creatures had caught a ride back with the astronauts on the second-to-last manned space expedition to Mars, back in 2013. The government had quarantined afflicted hosts in the 3 years between the creatures' arrival and the onset of the flu epidemics, but a sizable population of the strange parasites had evaded eradication. There had been much speculation that the Astras were responsible for spreading VX9, but that didn't make much sense. They were parasites, after all, and they needed human hosts to survive. Live hosts. No, when it was all said and done, VX9 had pretty much spelled the end of the Astras as well. They were small. Tom Chambers never grew to more than 9 inches in length, even in his happiest years. They resembled insects, but they had some human characteristics as well. 10 toes, 10 fingers, an ability to reason, a knack for finding hosts. Picture a plastic Ken doll with a top exoskeleton and a bullet-shaped head used to burrow into the folds of human flesh. They lacked eyes, instead intuiting their way towards heat, before adhering themselves to the ribcage, clamping on with their pincer-like mandibles and sucking nutrients from within. But not unlike Penelope Crump, some of the creatures did manage to survive. One damp morning, Penny had been making eggs for breakfast in the kitchen when there was a tremendous crash against the window. It had been an Astra, one solitary Astra. The creature eventually went away, but soon there were others. They began congregating around Crump's compound, a fully automated luxury home that she ran on solar energy. And until Hank Ridley's heart quit on him in the back garden, and he'd pitched over in the tomatoes, and until Sarah had snuck out in the dark of night, Crump had been repulsed by the creatures. Even after she found herself utterly alone in the world, she avoided them. But they followed her, perching there on the kitchen windowsill, climbing across the front picture window. Whenever she went outside to clean the solar panels or harvest a basket of vegetables, she guarded herself against their advances. She fought them back with citronella torches, with the length of pipe she had fashioned into a club, and in time they disappeared. The weather changed and grew cold, and her yard filled with their tiny corpses. And then the winter passed, and it became warm again, and there were no more Astras in the world. Penny was thankful for the change in season, and she spent her days outside. The Oregon sunshine warmed the land and nourished her bountiful garden, and there were no people and no alien parasites, and it was just Penny Crump and her thoughts and the wind that whipped off the surface of the white-capped Columbia River. And then one morning she awoke, and he was stuck to her ribcage. His head was fully embedded in the folds of skin beneath her sagging breasts, and she watched the thing with a creeping revulsion as its midsection pulsed. It was taking from her, draining her from inside. She tried to remain calm. It was common knowledge that simply ripping the parasite from her torso could lead to its beheading, and if that was the case, she was as good as dead. An infected Astra wound invariably ended badly. Instead, she walked calmly to the kitchen, made herself a cup of tea. When she was finished with her breakfast, she went outside to the garden, remaining wary of additional Astras. Except for the one stuck to her midsection, there were none. They were alone. She went to the shed and found a set of old barbecue tongs. Gently, carefully, she tried to pry the thing from beneath her flesh. Of course, it didn't budge. She spent the afternoon trying every folk remedy that she could think of for removing Martian Astras from the ribcage. Warm water, alcohol soak, peanut butter, even tickling. That last attempt at removal had only caused the thing to burrow further, so she stopped immediately. That night, she ate a salad with grape tomatoes and watched a movie on the DVD player. Invasion of the Body Snatchers, how appropriate. And then decided to sleep on it. Careful not to roll on her left side and crush the thing, she went to bed early and quickly fell asleep. He had been a mere 5 inches in length when he first adhered, but on day 2, Penny Crump was sure that he'd grown. She decided to create a chart, marking the date clearly at the top and estimating the little bugger's weight and length. "Well," she said, a mixture of sincere awe and pride in her tone, "you sure can eat." She noticed that she too was famished, so she ate 3 apples, 2 pears, and a whole bowl of Bing cherries. She washed it all down with a frothy vanilla intuer. And when she was finished with that, loosed a huge belch. The Astra seemed to grow agitated, cupping her sides with its little fingers in alarm. Then it seemed to sigh and settle and become still. "There, there," Pennycrumb said. She touched it, apprehensively at first, and then more kindly. "You're the last of your kind, aren't you?" The Astra made no reply, of course, but there was a response all the same. From the somewhere in the furthest reaches of her mind, a small voice agreed with her. Pennycrumb spent the rest of the day reading on the deck and working in the garden. The notion of removing her new companion as distant from her thoughts as the storm clouds gathering over the Pacific. The two of them fell into a routine, and soon they came to understand each other. Penny did the talking, of course. Tom Chambers just couldn't speak. His name had come from a trading card she had found in the street after waking up from the initial bout with VX9. The waking had been a surprise, of course. When the flu first hit, citizens reported to the government-operated passage tents for quarantine. Of course, that was back when hope had still reigned across the land. Penny had contracted VX9 late, well after the rule of law had lost any real meaning, and people were bunkering down with their friends and family to grow sick and die together. But having no one, Penny had dutifully walked to the nearest passage tent, a huge affair in downtown Boise, filled with rotting corpses and moaning patients. She'd selected a clean bed in the far corner and fallen quickly into unconsciousness, assuming that the future that awaited her was just on the other side of that thin line of mortality. When she'd awoken, she'd shed 23 pounds. There were no more dying patients, only the dead. She felt her face, felt the skin on her arms, amazed that she still was. Then she walked into the street. The dead were everywhere. She made her way down the center of West Idaho Street, and before too long, that trading card had come tumbling across the asphalt, pushed by the wind before lodging against her ankle. She plucked it free and stared at it. There was a man on the front, a tall man in a basketball uniform with the word Phoenix emblazoned across the front. His cheeks were flushed red, and he had feathery blonde hair. He was running, and he had a basketball in his hands. Tom Chambers. It was an old card, yellow around the edges and better than 30 years old. She studied it, wondering what had happened to the man in the photograph. He looked so alive, so vital and healthy. Could he still exist somewhere, untouched by this creeping death? She tucked the card into her pocket and kept walking, beginning the half-decade of nomadic travel that would ultimately lead her to the solar house on the bluffs high above the Columbia River in western Oregon. On the day she had decided to name the Astra, she didn't have to think twice about what she would call him. And so, for many years, Pennycrumb and Tom Chambers carved a life for themselves out of what remained after the dieback. They had vegetables and fruits and DVDs and books and art supplies and fishing equipment and a bicycle and warm showers. They had each other. And then, one day, while putting up vegetables for an autumn that would come barreling through the mouth of the gorge in a week or so, Pennycrumb cut her hand. It wasn't much, just a 2-inch laceration on the back of her left hand. She'd raked her hand against the sharp edge of a rusted food tin she'd used as a planter for cayenne peppers. The cut bled a little, but she'd cleaned it and dressed it and put it out of her mind. Tom Chambers had, in his way, expressed sadness for a momentary pain, but they'd both understood it to be a minor thing. Only it wasn't. It wasn't a minor thing at all. The wound became pink, and then red, with angry streaks that webbed across the back of her hand. It itched incessantly, and it wouldn't heal, no matter how much salve she applied. At night, Tom Chambers was restless. His little body, now a full 9 inches in length, was warm to the touch at first, and then it was like the handle of a skillet left too long on a stovetop. Within a week, the wound was weeping clear fluid, then clots of greenish pus. Tom Chambers became weak. There were days when he wouldn't move at all, and his respiration was shallow. On one of those sluggish days, Penny finally decided to leave the bluff in search of medicine. She wasn't sure if any of it still worked, but she had to try. She was in the doctor's office, a little place with faded sign that read Grace Segcull, M.D., General Practice, out front, when Tom Chambers died. She was in the pharmacy, reading the labels on the orange plastic bottles, when he became agitated. She felt his head moving from side to side. "Oh," she said, startled. "Tom! Tommy! What is it, little one?" The Astro moved his head back and forth, as though registering a brisk no. Then he grasped the sides of her ribcage with his little fingers and began to extricate himself from her. "Oh, no, Tom! No, honey, please, please just stay still! I'm working on it. Just give me a few more minutes and I'll have our medicine. It's nothing. Oh, Tom, it's nothing." She was blubbering, on the verge of complete collapse, and now the Astra seemingly couldn't wait to be free of her. It squirmed at her side, wriggling its head to and fro, and then, with a gusher of fluid and an audible pop, he was free. The creature slipped out of the harness she'd sewn in her shirt, and fell to the hard tile of the pharmacy floor. "Oh, God! Oh, my God!" Penny shrieked. "Tom! Tommy! Honey!" She fell to her knees and scooped him up. He moved weakly in her cupped hands, his gore-slicked mandibles clicking together, the sound like castanets. Tom Chambers lacked eyes with which to see her, but it didn't matter to Penny Crump. She knew they saw each other. Really saw each other in that moment. The creature hitched in a half dozen ragged breaths, and then the pincers clacked together and apart once again, and then he was gone, shuddering in her hands, his fingers and toes stilling suddenly. "Oh no," she gasped, pushing the Astra's corpse to her cheek. The sobs coursed through her, pushing her grief to the surface, where it bubbled out of her in torrents. Her tears mixed with bubbles of snot in her upper lip, and she found it hard to breathe. Her sorrow was so complete. "No, no, no, no." She crumpled to the ground, Tom Chambers clutched tight to her chest, and when she'd exhausted herself in her grief, she fell into a deep and tortured sleep. She slept through the afternoon and the night. And when she awoke the next morning, the storm clouds had invaded the gorge. A cold wind blew across the Columbia Plateau. Penny Crump stood and scooped up as much of the medicine as she could carry. She took Tom Chambers home and placed him in a casket she fashioned from an old apple box. The rain fell the rest of the afternoon, softening the ground in the small cemetery she'd created behind the house. The next day she buried Tom Chambers and, after saying a few words over his marker, she retreated inside. She made her way into the kitchen, as thirsty as she'd felt in all of her days. She drank a glass of water, then two more. After a time she fixed a salad and tried to eat it, only it hurt when she opened her mouth. That night, she lay in bed, her muscles like high-tension cords beneath her skin. She took her temperature and found that she, too, was on fire with fever. She fell in and out of fitful sleep before finally mustering the strength to drag herself into the kitchen, with the assortment of medications set in a pile on the table. She clutched the bottles in hands that worked haltingly. Dolophin, Cozar, Enbrel, Vancomycin. A violent seizure coursed through her. Her muscles knotted and her curved spine jerked straight. She fell to the floor with a cry, clutching at the tablecloth as she fell. A torrent of prescription bottles cascaded from the table down onto her. Blindly, she scooped up the nearest and spun the cap. Metronidazole. Hands shaking, she extricated a tablet and brought it to her mouth, a fresh series of seizures coursing through her. She clamped her eyes shut and opened her mouth to receive the medicine. Only, the thing didn't work. Her brain signaled her jaw to open, but the hinge refused. She snatched air in panic gusts between two flared nostrils, suddenly aware of the throbbing ache of her teeth. She strained to push the tablet into her mouth, but it was just no use. She pulled herself up, using the back of the chair where she had taken so many happy meals with Tom Chambers, and she stumbled out into the night, the wind and rain buffeting her, soaking her nightgown. She stumbled into the clearing behind the garden, where the parasite that had relied on her so completely now rested in the soil. Penny Crump fell to her knees, the pain in her joints and jaw a searing, living heat. She wailed, the word a small thing swallowed up in the wind and rain. She collapsed, her arm draped across his grave, and closed her eyes. On a fundamental level, she knew that there would be no second miracle, no second awakening. The knowledge comforted her, and in almost no time at all, she was asleep. There, in her dreams, she and Tom Chambers tended the garden together.
That was simply outstanding. That's the first story that we accepted for Redstone Science Fiction, and we really appreciate Daniel Powell for submitting such an excellent story to us, and Amanda Fitzwater for doing such a great job reading it. We're excited to start bringing you our stories in audio format, and we hope this is working out. We'd love to get some feedback from you. Please go to our audio page and comment there, or email us at editors@redstonesciencefiction if you have some ideas or comments on our podcast. Thanks for listening to Redstone Science Fiction. We'll be back soon.